Okay, the last hour of the program tonight, Joshua P. Warren joins us with his paranormal moment. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with Jonathan E. Moore as we talk about the FDA and what federal agencies are doing to abuse power and risk your life and liberty. And we'll be back in a moment with Jonathan on Coast to Coast AM. Jonathan, you've got, what, three cases pending before the FDA now? Tell me about them.
Right. We just won one of them. Alliance for Natural Health versus Sebelius. It was a case involving the FDA censorship of the selenium cancer risk reduction claims. We had a series of claims. Selenium is very effective as a cancer risk reducer, and there's a lot of evidence to support that. The FDA standard, in order to ensure the censorship continues, is that you have conclusive proof. Well, in science, virtually nothing is conclusive. You can almost assure yourself that you'll never get a room full of scientists who will agree 100% to anything. And so they always succeed in saying that the evidence is inconclusive and that they don't want to prove it. Well, in 1999, we won this landmark case called Pearson versus Shalala against FDA that said you can't censor inconclusive science. You have to allow the science to be communicated to the public, and the inconclusiveness can be revealed in a qualification. But you can't deny people access to science just because the government doesn't think the science is good enough for it to put an official stamp on it. You let the public decide. Our First Amendment vests in the individual right to decide. Okay, well, the FDA violated that decision, has continuously violated it since 1999. We've gone back to court again and again and defeated them in case after case involving claims. And so you have this very important bit of information. Selenium, a essential mineral, when consumed at 200 micrograms a day, results in a reduction in the risk of various kinds of cancer. Now, is it conclusively proven that it does? No. Is there good science to support it? Yes. Is the science contradicted? In some instances. But it's up to the public to decide. And, you know, it's your bet. Well, the court agreed with us. The court said they violated the First Amendment. They censored the information. The less restrictive resort for the FDA is a qualification. You won. So go back, FDA, and fix it. Will the FDA do it? Well, I bet you they'll drag their feet. We'll probably be back in court again over it. They have this absolute desire, because they're protecting a monopoly of therapeutic claims for drugs, to not allow the public to understand that food and supplements can have therapeutic effects. They don't want truthful information to reach people to cause them to have a paradigm shift, so they then start taking care of themselves, using foods to that are health-enhancing to limit their disease risk, and avoid the hospital and avoid the need for these drugs. So it's a disaster. I'll tell you how bad this is. David Kessler was an FDA commissioner. He was a pediatrician. We went to the FDA with a claim that folic acid reduces the risk of neural tube defect births.
Was that you?
Yes.
Okay. Great job.
And thank you very much for that. And we, you know, we went in there and we argued that that claim should be approved. Well, they denied it. Now, the March of Dimes, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the National Health Institutes of Health,
holistic doctors, they all did. They all supported you.
They all said that folic acid reduces the risk of neural tube defects. It was an unassailable scientific representation, as best you possibly could believe it. And yet, David Kessler, a pediatrician, said, no, I will not let that claim go through. And so you can't put it in the market. What was happening? Well, women would get pregnant. They would go to the doctor. The doctor would say, use folic acid. But it was too late.
Yeah.
Because folic acid has to be taken by women of childbearing age before they become pregnant in order to reduce their risk of a neural tube defect birth. And these things are horrific. Spina bifida, anencephaly, malformations of the brain and spinal column. This is horrific. Well, there were an estimated 2,500 preventable neural tube defect births each year and countless abortions that would have been prevented had the information been in the marketplace. And yet the commissioner of the FDA stood in the way of that information getting in the market for about 8 years.
Are they afraid that they're going to not get their job when they're out?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're also worried that if they change this paradigm, that they will lose control over the content of therapeutic information in the marketplace. They want absolute control. Only if they have absolute control can they deliver to a monopoly a claim that gives them an enormous financial reward. That's why in the statute, a drug is defined not by its biochemical effect on the body, but based on the claims made. That's why if you say prune juice treats constipation, even though that's absolutely true, it's prohibited by the government because it's a therapeutic claim. And the government, by definition, defines a drug as a substance that is indicated for use in the treatment of disease.
You know, just now I'm beginning to find out how important vitamin D is. We've done a couple shows on that. And yet I don't see any of this coming from the FDA. Nothing.
No, they're the big black hole of information. They suck it in and they censor it and they keep it out unless it pertains to an approved drug. And then they defend it and they go to the nth degree of keeping the drug in the market. And it's a tragedy. It's an enormous tragedy. It is all evidence of the destruction of constitutional government in America. Vitamin D, there's enormous evidence out there that it reduces the risk of breast, colon, and prostate cancer. And vitamin D is not alone. We could go on and on. I mean, resveratrol, reducing the risk of cardiovascular disease, and tocotrienols, reducing the risk of atherosclerosis. Even olive oil, reducing hypercholesterolemia, it lowers elevated HDL cholesterol. Is that out there? Why can't you put on an olive oil bottle, this product may lower elevated HDL cholesterol.
Yeah. And this is what's so strange, Jonathan. Years ago, I'm talking about years ago, you've heard of Edgar Cayce, the American prophet. You know, he used to, in his trance state, come up with remedies. His accuracy was uncanny. Years ago, he talked about how you should take a tablespoon of olive oil before you go to bed. I mean, these guys knew this stuff, yet it was never presented to the American people, and still really isn't.
The FDA operates on an entirely bogus premise, and that is that science is not a matter that is open to debate, but reaches an ultimate conclusion that is unassailable, that is, that there is no longer debate. And they say, we as the FDA will determine when that point is reached, and then we will allow the information into the market. And it's so offensive because, you know, it denies the individual sovereignty. It robs us of our ability to control our own biological destiny. It puts the government in place of our own discretion in the market. It denies us information to make basic choices. And you know, the First Amendment is the most magnificent thing in that when James Madison introduced the First Amendment to the first Congress of the United States in 1791, and he pronounced it when it was finally agreed to in its actual form, to be proof that the federal government had no power whatsoever over speech and press. And yet here we are with a government that is censoring a massive amount of information, prohibiting it by force of law that results in the prosecution of people, throwing them in jail, and seizing their products and declaring them unapproved, unsafe drugs. But the whole thing's based on this fraud, which is that the American people are so ignorant that they cannot comprehend.
Well, where'd you go?
Information.
There you are. There you are. What was the FDA's ridiculous fight over cherries? Did you know about that?
Yes, I was involved with that well.
Okay, tell me about that.
Well, you know, here I get this call from these farmers. They have cherry trees. They have groves in Michigan and Wisconsin. And, you know, they call up and they say, we've got a problem. I said, well, what's that? And, well, we've got FDA inspectors coming in. I said, you're on a farm, right? I said, yeah. Well, what do you sell? Well, we sell cherry juice. Okay, let me get this straight. You have trees, groves, cherry trees. And they're coming in. What are they going to do? What do they say they're going to do? Well, they're going to prosecute us. Well, all right, what's the reason? Well, we're telling people what we found out. We had scientific studies done at the university. We found out that cherry juice is anti-inflammatory and that it actually helps with arthritis. And I said, okay, you have the science to support that, yes. Well, I've got some news for you. It doesn't matter if you have all the proof in the world that that's true. It is illegal in the United States for you to tell anyone. What do you think of that?
Jeez.
You mean I can't tell? You mean I can't tell people what the scientists at the university? We paid money for that.
Yeah.
We had them evaluate. We have, for years, have been drinking this stuff, and we've noticed that it, you know, it reduces our arthritic pain, and we can't transmit that to anybody in the market? No, you can't. It's illegal. Well, they didn't understand. When I talked to the FDA, I said, what are you going to do with these people? You're going to go in and put fences around the trees? You're going to yank the trees out of the ground? You're going to seize all of the cherries? Do you like to beat up farmers? I mean, who cares? The information is accurate. Why are you doing this?
Are they trying at all, Jonathan, to protect us from any of the unsavory types? And there's some out there.
Well, yes. They prosecute bad people every now and again, and they do a good job of it sometimes. Oftentimes they're incompetent. But what's really so disturbing is that this agency is a political cesspool.
Yeah.
I mean, the choice of how to use the millions of dollars that they receive, the hundreds of millions of dollars they receive. You know, you don't spend $500,000 going after someone for cherries. You don't spend $15 to $20 million fighting to defend the American public from the claim that folic acid reduces neural tube defect births, particularly when you're causing people to die and to suffer immeasurably. Yet there's something that motivates that, and the thing that motivates that is a corrupt political bargain at the outset. It is that the FDA commissioner runs a political gauntlet before Congress in order to get his position. And that gauntlet involves winks and nods and promises of protection. And you've got a situation where the Congress is so corrupt. You have roughly three lobbyists from the drug industry for every member of Congress. $1 billion was spent lobbying Congress in the past decade by the pharmaceutical industry.
$1 billion. This has got to be
frustrating
for those good people who are working at the FDA. The biologists, the scientists. This has got to be very frustrating for some of them, huh?
Oh, it's horrible. And, you know, there are many good scientists at the FDA, good people, honest people who want to make a difference for their country. And they can't, you know, this is why there's an endless stream of whistleblowers from FDA. They go to Congress, and really, they're risking their careers. They're risking being blacklisted. I've got one scientist who I represented, that's remained nameless, and that scientist knew that when she communicated information to the Congress of the United States, that the political managers at FDA would notify the people who she was publishing her articles for peer review that she was rotten, not to publish her work. They would destroy her reputation, and that she couldn't leave the agency, but she would be stigmatized and would be denied good work and everything, just because she wanted to communicate that the FDA had suppressed scientific information revealing that a drug had been approved despite fraud, absolute bogus clinical trials found by the FDA, but the FDA approved the drug anyway, even though the science people said, you can't do this. This is fraud. Even though the party that committed the fraud was under federal investigation for the fraud.
How do we find out that these drugs are no good? What happens? Is it the whistleblower? I mean, who accumulates all these reports that, you know, 25 people died, 30 people died? How do they put that together? And then how do we, members of the media, finally find out about it?
Well, because of this sick system that says to the drug industry, you tell us if your drug's unsafe. If you don't tell us that your drug's unsafe, we're going to assume it's safe.
So they let them school themselves.
Oh, yeah. People don't realize this, but the FDA doesn't conduct any scientific clinical trial of any drug it approves. It relies entirely on the industry to determine whether the drug is safe or not. So if the company that has spent $600 million on a drug and has submitted its petition to the FDA doesn't reveal the safety problems, and there are many instances that we know of where they have suppressed information that is adverse and where they have misconstrued the information purposefully and have even limited, let's say they have three scientists working on a clinical trial. And let's say at the end of the clinical trial, some really bad information came out about the harm that the drug could cause. They may have the first two scientists who are assigned to one part, they segregate them. First two scientists who are assigned to the first part and the second part that got good results without safety issues publish their results. But the last scientist will be cut off and be told, here's your final payment, and don't talk about this. We have a confidentiality agreement with you. If you break it, we'll sue you.
That's just.
And then they go to the FDA with the good information. And then the FDA scientists, and this is where a lot of credit is due, even with all of that, many of these scientists have found problems. I mean, Dr. Andrew Mosholder at the FDA, he's an FDA medical reviewer, he discovered that the antidepressant drugs, the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, Paxil, Zoloft, and Effexor, could increase the risk of suicidal thoughts in kids.
Oh, my God.
Yet it was approved and allowed into the market. He was objecting. He was denied the right to appear before an FDA review panel to reveal his information. They wouldn't let him do it.
Our doctors,
so the drug would be approved.
Jonathan, are doctors required to report adverse effects of drugs when their patients come and see them?
They're not required to, but they're strongly urged to. And so, yes, a patient shows an adverse event. That's where all that Vioxx information was coming from. It was doctor after doctor after doctor, cardiologist after cardiologist, finding this uncanny that every time they used this Vioxx,
Something happened.
Now, it wasn't in every instance, but it was in a number of instances where it appeared to them to be virtually undeniable that there was a correlation. And then this inspired the Lancet and other medical peer-reviewed medical journals to do clinical research, and then they came out with the information. Merck, in its application, had said that there is an increase. This is what they said. They compared Vioxx with naproxen, which is a safe painkiller. Vioxx is
Naproxen's over-the-counter, right?
Yes, and they compared in their study. Merck compared the effectiveness of Vioxx with the effectiveness of naproxen, and they admitted that there was this apparent 3 times increase in the risk of heart attack from Vioxx. But they said that it was only an apparent difference because they argued, and this is an argument and it's unfounded, that really what you're seeing here is that naproxen reduces the risk of heart attack by at least 3 times, which was ridiculous. But the FDA just accepted that, and the FDA medical reviewers, the political managers accepted, medical reviewers were saying, hey, look, this is serious stuff. This makes no sense. This drug increases the risk of heart attack by 3 times. David Graham was screaming about it, and the FDA approves the drug anyway. It becomes a primary drug for the treatment of osteoarthritis. It's sent all over the world.
Hey, Jonathan, when we come back, I want to talk with you about the non-pandemic bird flu when we come back and also get your take on what's going on in Europe. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. StreamLink, you can pick it up for just pennies a day. You go to coasttocoastam.com to sign up for StreamLink, where you get your podcasting and your past archives, and you get your iPhone apps and soon to be your Android apps and all kinds of apps. All you got to do is go to coasttocoastam.com. Jonathan, let's talk a little bit about the pandemic. The World Health Organization, with just a few hundred cases, said this is going to be a pandemic. They talked about a vaccine was in the making, everyone should get it. We on this program came out and said there's not going to be a pandemic. If you want to get a vaccine, that's your business. I'm not going to get it. But how in God's name could they come up with that and scare the world into this? Was this part of that whole scheme too, or was there some real science behind it?
Well, there is a lot of untoward things behind this. There is some science to support their theories about the pandemic, but the point is that anyone would have realized who was an expert in this area. I'm one of the consultants to my law firm is Dr. Charles B. Simone. He was Ronald Reagan's physician, Vice President Hubert Humphreys, and he's an eminent immunologist and oncologist. And he told me from the very start, Jonathan, this is a bunch of bull. He said to me, this pandemic is not going to materialize, but moreover, the notion that you could affect a change if there were such a pandemic with a vaccine is ridiculous because the virus will mutate and the vaccine will be designed based on scientists' best guess of what the virus will be, but it's not going to stop, just like with the flu virus. Flu vaccines are terribly ineffectual. I mean, they may, if you're right on, which is very rare, you're okay, but the typical circumstance, you've got the mutations of the flu virus, and the vaccine will be either ineffectual or only slightly effectual. So the bird flu thing got way out of hand because public health authorities seized upon it, and there were several interested in using it as a model to show, to enlist public health authorities in crisis response. And this is in anticipation of terrorist events or biological hazards. But it's all based on their own self-interest in testing the measures to be used. And this is playing a game with the American public that you will still find people saying that there is a pandemic. You'll find people saying that the flu epidemic is also an epidemic, even though it didn't reach levels that were anywhere near what was predicted. And the reason is that the best defense against a virus is sanitation. It always has been.
Yeah.
So to gear everyone up and to make people stand in lines to get vaccinated and to be panic-stricken that they're going to suffer an ailment that will destroy their lives when the probability of that happening is very remote is grossly irresponsible. But if you're in a position in government and you want to test all these neat theories about responding to an emergency and protecting the public from a terrorist event or a biological hazard, what better thing to do than to create a real-life threat?
Absolutely. What's going on in Europe? How are the Europeans handling all this compared to us?
In global censorship of health information, I explain in detail what's going on here. And people, as I said before, you can get the book through emord.com. It's listed on the left in the front page. I think you can get it from your website too, George. And you can get it directly from Amazon. But in there, as I explain now, but it's more detail there, Europe is a disaster. This is what has happened to poor Europe. The European Union is about, through its European Commission, is about to implement the European Federation of Food Safety Authorities' recommendations on supplements. Now, the way this works is twofold. There is a list of supplements that will have to be removed from the market in Europe. Presently, the order is in place that they be removed, but it will have to be implemented by 2011, causing herbs in Europe and vitamins in Europe to disappear from the shelves in large numbers, hundreds. And it's predicated on this. They reversed the burden of proof before the European Food Safety Authority's directive was adopted several years ago. It was the law in Europe as it is presently in the United States, although it's being changed, and we can talk about that, that it was up to the government to prove that something was unsafe that's in the food supply before it could be taken off the market. What they did was say the industry may not sell any of these products unless it proves the product's safe to our satisfaction, we being the government of Europe, European Food Safety Authority. So if you don't submit a dossier with proof that your product is safe, it's presumed unsafe and has to be taken off the market. And so this is resulting in hundreds of products that have been safely consumed being taken off the market.
And cheap, too, weren't they?
Cheap.
Very, very inexpensive for people.
And now the costs are going up and the variety of products will diminish. And in addition, they're implementing a censorship regime that is the most extreme one you've ever seen. It is a standard that is virtual conclusive proof. Again, you have to submit. Now, you know, before this went into place, each country in Europe had its differing standard. And there was a lot of information being disseminated about nutritional products. Now, with this new directive in place, no claim, not even a claim that a product is good for you, can be made for any supplement unless it is pre-approved by this European Food Safety Authority and ultimately the European Commission. So the Europeans are in a very bad way. People there are going to be desperate who have relied upon nutritional products to guide their health and are no longer going to be able to have them by 2011. In addition, information is going to there's a pall of censorship that is being imposed all over Europe on nutrition science. It's a new dark age there. And that's horrendous. And believe it or not, it's easy to believe after what we've been talking about, but regulators in the United States are absolutely smitten beside themselves with joy about how wonderful this European system is and how great it would be if it was applied here in the United States. And there are members of Congress who believe the same thing.
Well, they would love to do that here, wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's right. And Congressman Henry Waxman, who, by the way, we're talking about undue influence of drug industry, he gets about $150,000 each election cycle from the pharmaceutical industry in contributions. If you go to opengovernments.org or opensecrets.org, you can see the contribution history for him. And here he condemns condemns conflicts of interest in the FDA, saying that, you know, you've got people in the FDA who are on these panels who have worked for the same drug companies or get money indirectly from the same drug companies that the drug they're reviewing is coming from. So they have a bias, and he condemns that bias. And here he is sitting in as the head of the Energy and Commerce Committee overseeing the FDA, and he has an absolutely outrageous conflict of interest himself, accepting all this money from the regulated class that he's overseeing. So there's phoniness and, you know, smoke and mirrors is commonplace there, but it's just horrible. And anyway, in the United States, they're looking at Europe favorably and would very much like to implement it. And in fact, in a case I won on ephedra, which was reversed on appeal, the FDA used the very same principle called the precautionary principle to shift the burden of proof here and actually operates now as a practical matter with the same burden-shifting approach. They just don't have the authorization to apply it in a blanket way, but they would like that.
What do you see today as the most pressing problem in our relationship with the FDA?
The most pressing problem we have is that the FDA is unaccountable to the courts, the Congress, and the American people, and that it operates as a dictatorship. And the individuals in charge of it pursue their own self-interest at the expense of the American people. And there is a way to resolve this. And in The Rise of Tyranny, I explain exactly, point by point, how we can restore constitutional government. Because what we're really talking about here is the creation of a bureaucratic oligarchy in the United States. It's not just the FDA that is running this country. It's numerous federal agencies that are empowered to legislate that are unelected.
Yeah.
You know, at the time of the founding of the Republic, the call was no taxation without representation. And the founders predicted that if we ever in this country delegated away either legislative and executive power, legislative, executive, and judicial power to single hands, it would be the end of liberty and the birth of tyranny. And they warned us against allowing that delegation to happen. And that is what has happened. And so ultimately, to solve the FDA, you've got to neuter it. You have to take the power away. And what I've recommended is briefly, and it's in much more detail in The Rise of Tyranny and in Global Censorship, but what I've recommended is that we pass a bill that I wrote for Congressman Ron Paul that would eliminate the FDA's ability to impose prior restraints on health information, leaving it with the power to prosecute after the fact when the government finds fraud, but only when it can prove statements to be false. So truthful information would come, as it does in every other instance, into the market, and those who are engaged in fraud would be specifically prosecuted. The other thing that we need to do is to take away from the FDA the drug approval power. FDA is hopelessly corrupt. There's no way it can be reformed. The interests are so powerful in influencing the judgment there. We've got to make it a blinded system. What I've recommended in global censorship and in the rise of tyranny is that we take that power and have the Justice Department accept drug applications, make them blinded, take out the drug industry's name, make the drug industry forbidden under a penalty of felonious prosecution for their officers to communicate their interest in the application. Take the application, farm it out to universities that are identified as centers for drug testing and evaluation, have them do it in secret, and then they produce a report after testing the drug and determining its relative safety and efficacy, whether it's approved or not. And this would then decentralize the process, leave it up to academics, get politics out of it, and enable us to determine whether drugs are safe or not. And the ultimate thing to do here, which is a very simple reform, but would restore in this country.
Yeah. Let me ask you something. Do you have a call waiting by any chance?
Call waiting.
Yeah.
I think I might.
I think somebody's trying to call you because it knocks you off the air for a couple seconds. So we'll fix that at the top of the hour.
Okay.
We know how to do that.
Oh, good.
Does the FDA regulate supplements at all in terms of how they're manufactured, who makes them?
Oh, George, this is one of the biggest myths that the government has propounded for years. They regulate supplements to an extreme degree. They have the power to take any product off the market. They prohibit any adulterated product from being marketed. They control the process by which products are made now through the GMPs. The GMPs are a disaster in themselves, but they regulate the process by which supplements are made under the GMPs in extreme detail, over 1,000 pages of regulations, so opaque and almost incomprehensible in every turn that it's outrageous. I had Steve Hanke, the senior economist for Reagan's Council of Economic Advisors, review them, and he said to me that those regulations were comparable to the regulations that are imposed on the nuclear power industry. They were so complex and ridiculous. For a food industry. They're more complex and onerous than they are in the drug context. To say that the supplement industry isn't regulated is absurd.
This is just remarkable. I mean, and frightening. People want to
terribly frightening.
People want to take care of themselves. They want to do it cost effectively, and they're not allowed to.
Right. And, you know, what really just absolutely is abhorrent to me, it's on several levels. Now, I grew up in a country, I was a military brat, and we were stationed in England. My dad used to wake up early in the morning to the sounds of a siren, run off to the airfield, and they would fly the F-100s to France and refuel and go to the Soviet border and draw out the MiGs and photograph the MiGs and fly back. And these were very patriotic people, and we loved this country. And you love this country not just because it's a nice thing to love. You love it for what it stands for, which is embodied in our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution. It's a constitution of liberty. If there's any hallmark characteristic of the American people, it is that we are a free people. We have liberty protected by law. But that has been destroyed. And that's what's so offensive to me. I am upset in many levels. I don't like the FDA for approving unsafe drugs. I don't like people who are engaged in that horrendous business. I don't like that FDA censors truthful health information that could help people save their lives. But ultimately, I don't like the Congress of the United States for giving FDA that power and turning its back on the problem
right.
And not solving it. And they do that because it's in their financial interest to do it.
Can we cure cancer with supplements? With vitamins, in your opinion?
I don't believe you can cure cancer with supplements, but I believe that you can reduce the risk.
Maybe boost your immune system.
Yes, and I believe that in some instances you can prevent people from ever getting cancer if they abide by a lifestyle regimen that involves supplementation and exercise and diet restriction. But I think that what we have is evidence that various dietary supplements, antioxidants, can reduce your risk of cancer. And the government, by the way, I won that case. And there was an order, a mandate, constitutional mandate to FDA that you allow the antioxidant vitamin cancer risk reduction claim. And FDA, after refusing to abide by the order, finally implemented it. And then a couple of years ago, unilaterally reversed its decision and forbade it again, in direct contradiction of the contravention of the court order. And we're back in court. That's one of the two cases pending. And we're fighting for that one. If we win that one, you'll hear about it. That'll be another momentous victory for the rights of people to get information in the market. But I don't like doing this piecemeal. I want a day to come when someone gives me the authorization, the financial wherewithal, to go take down this agency's whole regime on censorship by filing numerous well-scientifically backed nutrient disease claims and then prosecuting that agency and forcing it to open those doors and get that into the market. If we can flood the market with that information, they'll lose their power. If people see the truth, they start experiencing the benefits of lifestyle changes that come about from good eating habits and dietary supplementation, they're going to realize that they have been deprived of that information by a government that is outrageously censorial in its treatment of the information, and they will forbid it. They'll go to the ballot box. They'll think of it consciously. They'll view as suspicious any bureaucrat that attempts to take back their liberty. It has to happen. I'm just hoping that it does in my lifetime. I want to be there. I want to lead the charge. I want to be the one who drives the stake through the ugly wooden, ugly black heart of that agency.
Well, anytime you get a home run victory, you just let us know and we'll pop you on for a little bit, all right?
Wonderful.
I want the world to know that we're winning some of these battles, Jonathan.
Well, we are. And I ultimately, although I may sound pessimistic through tonight's conversation, I am optimistic. And the reason is that I do trust in the judgment of the American people. I think ultimately, when given enough information, we will throw those rascals out. We will restore a constitutional republic to this nation. We will end the bureaucratic oligarchy that's destroying our freedoms. And I believe we'll do it. And I want my children to live in a free country. I want them to have the information necessary to live healthful and long and happy lives. I want everyone else's kids to experience that as well. And I want this corruption to end. I want to stop it. I want to be a part in the stopping of it. I'm not a person who likes to sit on the sidelines. I want to be there in the middle of this battle, and I want to make a difference. And if I can do that, if I can actually achieve these things, we've won 7 times, but I'm just going to keep doing this for as long as I possibly can.
Your website, emord.com, right?
That's it.
All right. Perfect. The two books we're talking about, part of Jonathan's work, The Rise of Tyranny and Global Censorship of Health Information. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now. And I'll tell you what we'll do, because so many of you are just so fascinated and just so inquisitive about what we're talking about tonight. Next hour will be phone calls. We'll take them with Jonathan E. Mord and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. I'll be right back.